Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is Podcast 404, the second half of the Jason Lewis appearance on the Bob Davis Podcast. Looking forward to that. Certainly both of us have changed since we did talk radio. He did afternoons, I did nights, and then I did mornings. And we also worked together over at the other talk station in town years later. And I think it's really interesting how our own personal experience and the things that we've done post talk radio have informed and changed some of the ideas that both of us have, and it's great to just revisit some of this stuff with Jason. We're going to do that in podcast 404. People say, and Jason, the first thing he said, right, was when he got in the car, in the vehicle, I call it the car, it's the mobile podcast command unit, was this is pretty cool, actually, because I'm not sure what he thought he was going to encounter when I convinced him to come out and do an interview in the mobile podcast command unit. Well, it came from Ed Johnson at X-Government Cars, and the discussion, as I have talked about many times on podcast, is that, you know, I wanted to get a panel van, and he said, don't get a panel van because they're more expensive. Ambulances are ready to go, and so he found me an ambulance, and I was amazed. And xgovernmentcars.com is a great sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast, have for a long time. I've had 3 Crown Vicks, and now, of course, the ambulance, and so I'm obviously a big fan of xgovernmentcars.com and a customer. And I want to remind people that xgovernmentcars.com is the one and only auto dealer in Minnesota specializing in off-fleet government vehicles. Of course, they have the Crown Vicks, they have the Chargers, they have the Ford Police Sedan and more. And we're soon going to be introducing ex-government trucks, because a lot of these municipalities are getting Expeditions and Yukons and Suburbans and, you know, these big trucks, as well as the Ford Police SUV and so forth. So ex-government trucks is going to be introduced soon in Forest Lake. I'll tell you all about that, but let's review very quickly. One of the cool things about ex-government cars is that they have the kind of financing that gets everybody approved and fast. You can apply online safely and securely at xgovernmentcars.com. They also offer great cash discounts direct from owner Ed Johnson. So great government professionally maintained off-fleet vehicles. You have a 3-day guarantee and everyone's approved auto loans. It's all at xgovernmentcars.com. And yeah, are you guys ready? Are you ready for the bullhorn? Here we go.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Which, by the way, people who really study foreign policy know that if we don't have this quote-unquote agreement with Iran, it really doesn't mean a war with Iran. There are other tools that we can use to address the situation. We can always renegotiate. So,
if they don't have the agreement, they can expedite their uranium enrichment.
Well, they're going to do that anyway.
No, they're not. The agreement. First of all, one of the things we know about the negotiations with Iran. Sorry, I hate to burst your bubble, BB, but they were no closer to a bomb today than they were in 1993 when Netanyahu first came to Congress and said, they're going to have a bomb next month. Well, this notion that they were close to a bomb, it takes 90% enrichment of U-235 to get to a bomb. They were at 20%. They're taking that down in the agreement to 3.7%.
But here's the thing. They're going to have their inspectors. We're not going to be able to know. And the thing is, if you're Iran and you know that if you possess a nuclear weapon, it's a game changer for you. So for them, it's just like North Korea. Somewhere they're enriching uranium, and they're going to continue. And it's a question of how many centrifuges they have and where they are.
In the last
just
one,
a second, it's a question of how many centrifuges they have, where they are, and what we don't know about. But I guess what I was just trying to say is, everybody says if we don't have this agreement, there's going to be a war with Iran.
What's the alternative?
We can continue doing what we're doing. We can renegotiate. There's a lot of things.
The Republican establishment in the debates and elsewhere have already said they're in favor of bombing Iran.
Yeah, but I'm saying to you, I'm not talking about what the Republicans are saying. I'm saying people are trying to create this impression that it's either this agreement or war, when it doesn't have to be. It's not necessary to have a war with Iran just because we don't have this agreement. And both sides have set this up that this is, if we don't have this agreement, we're going to have a war. Well, that's ridiculous, because they have been doing this all along, and we haven't had a war with them. So Why do we have to have a war now? Because nothing's changed.
Why do we have to tell Iran what to do? In the last 188 years, name me a country Iran's attacked.
Well, they've attacked through state-sponsored terrorism. Yeah, in the United States. Lebanon.
In Lebanon is not the United States. Their support of Hamas, their support of Hezbollah, is state-sponsored terrorism to protect the state of Iran. Well, I'm not justifying
that's their story, and they're sticking to it.
No, I'm not justifying that, but I'm telling you, the World Trade Center bombings in 1993, the World Trade 9/11 attack. USS Cole, all of international terrorism has been conducted by which branch of Islam? Oh, yeah, that would be the Sunnis. That would be the ones we're giving aid to in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, in UAE. Oh, that's right. The Shias hate the Sunnis, and they want to eliminate them. But we can't allow that because we've got control of the chess pieces. So we can't allow Iran and Syria, Syria was a one-time ally, to actually defeat ISIS because we're too busy trying to figure out a way to go to war with them. There's absolutely no reason we should be at loggerheads with Persians. None.
Well, we can address all that. We don't need that. In other words, what I don't understand about the agreement is I don't understand the pressing need for the agreement. The pressing need for the agreement is this is a centerpiece for the president's foreign policy legacy. That's really what it is. And I don't think we need an agreement to accomplish what we need to accomplish. And we also don't need a war with Iran.
Well, it's the same thing they said about Reagan. He was going soft in the old days doing the INF agreement, and the war hawks were at his throat, and it turned out to bring the Soviet Union down. You don't have to hate everybody. The Iranians' arch enemy.
Don't put me out as a hater. I'm not saying I hate Iran. I'm just saying that I think
Who's their arch enemy?
Just a second. I think it's a problem for people to say, if we don't have this agreement, we're going to have a war. I think that's an incorrect
assessment. Well, that's what everybody's
advocating. But that's what they're all saying, but I'm telling you, that's not
necessary. So what do they do? We don't have the agreement, and you've got Iran continuing to enrich then, and people on your side of the aisle would be saying, oh, look at them, they're enriching, we got to do something.
My side of the aisle.
The anti-agreement side.
I said that what has been set up is that if we don't have this agreement, we will have a war.
What is the alternative to the agreement?
Well, there's all kinds of levels of
so you're going to raise the sanctions, presumably.
There's all kinds of things you can do.
All kinds is not an answer.
Okay, well, let me answer that. Right. You keep interrupting me.
All right, go ahead.
Sir. No, I mean, there's all sorts of options. There's where you place troops. There's other agreements, other countries. There's trade agreements. There's sanctions. There's all kinds of levels of things that can be employed to put pressure on or remove pressure from Iran with and without agreement. We have an agreement with North Korea, and it didn't prevent North Korea from enriching uranium and actually testing a nuclear weapon.
That's right.
And this one won't either if they're determined to get a nuclear
Pakistan
weapon.
And Pakistan has a bomb, so we're going to have to eliminate that one because actually there's more Wahhabists and jihadists in Pakistan than there are in Iran.
I'm just saying, regardless of what your position is, if you want to say, if we don't have this agreement, we're going to have a war, it's not really a correct statement because there are other options that can be employed. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, like boots on the ground. That'd
no,
be another
not
option.
Necessarily.
Well, you just said troops a minute ago.
No, I didn't. I didn't say troops at all.
You said you can place troops in certain areas.
I said you can move troops around the region.
Yeah, I
want
to bring the troops
assets
home.
Around the region if you want that are an alternative to actual war. So I just have a problem with the suggestion that if we don't have this agreement right now, if we don't do this right now, that there's going to be a war with Iran.
And I have a problem with a knee-jerk reaction that everybody says, oh, this agreement, those Persians can't be trusted. They're only taking down their uranium enrichment to 3.7%. They're reducing their stockpiles 98%. And by the way, the IAEA, which in 24 days can go in against their will, is going to be controlled by a Western panel, of which the Russians have one voice. They're outnumbered. So I don't know what, you know, maybe Reagan was wrong on arms control too, but it seemed to work pretty well. This notion that
it worked well with the Russians. I don't know that it's going to work well with Iran.
Well, we're at war with the Russians too again because those nasty Russians.
Well, then it didn't work, right?
No, we've got to get off this notion that the United States can play policeman of the world. If we let Japan defend their region, we wouldn't have to worry as much about North Korea.
So how far does the U.S. defense perimeter extend?
to national security levels. If there's
what's
a
that?
Direct threat to the United States, I'm all for intervention. After 9/11, you bomb the Marines.
Short of intervention, where is the defensive perimeter for the country?
There is no such thing as a perimeter.
Well, there's the borders, right? We always assumed that the nature of the position of the United States was the borders of the United States was Fortress America, right? So we learned, obviously, during the Cold War that we have to extend our defense perimeter. So where is the defense perimeter, and how do we manage that?
This is sort of the JFK New Frontier attitude that, okay, we're going to take the Monroe Doctrine, and now we're going to apply it to the Southern Hemisphere, and anything done down there will be considered an attack on the United States. And pretty soon, we're in every country across the globe. We're still in the Balkans. We're still in Germany. We're still in South Korea. We're still in Japan. God knows we've been in the Middle East since Napoleon invaded Egypt, for crying out loud. We cannot control the globe. Let those regional conflicts play out.
I don't disagree with
that. If there is an imminent threat to the United States, not only can we defend it, the president doesn't even have to go to Congress.
I don't disagree with that, and I don't want this to be a debate. I'm trying to ask questions. I don't disagree with that, but I'm not talking about necessarily intervention in countries. I'm talking about defending our security interests, and I don't mean
What do you mean our security interests?
Let's suppose you have a country
oil quota out of the Middle East. Is
no,
that what you're talking about?
Not at all. Although some would argue that making sure that oil stays on the world market is a viable national security.
Yeah, I can't figure out why those people hate us. So we put in the Shah in 1953, he puts a thumb down on people. Now they hate us. I can't figure that out.
Well, I think they'd hate us anyway, so I don't really care.
Well, see, and that's a problem. There is this innate sort of prejudice towards that part of the globe because they do things that we don't like.
What about them being prejudiced against us because we're successful and they don't like us?
What?
Yeah,
that's why they don't like us.
Why can't they?
They just hate us because it has nothing to do with the fact.
Honestly, Jason, I don't know why they. I don't know why they quote unquote don't like us. Personally, I've said this before. I never actually thought that they hated us. I think when you look at the polls and stuff, that people said that they hated us, but then they all want to come here. So I don't know that. And I realize that's rhetorical, but I don't know that individuals in different parts of the country actually hate
what
America.
What did Bin Laden say? Was his reason. By the way, we had supported the
He wanted this out.
Foreign occupiers.
Right.
Let's call their bluff. Let's see what happens. Maybe we could get out. But you've got idiots like Glenn Beck out there talking about the coming caliphate as though they're getting their foreign policy out of the Old Testament and it's a big religious war. It's going to be a long 21st century. But you know what? Somebody else's son and daughter can go.
Well, and again, I don't want you to paint me as saying I agree with Glenn Beck or that we're going to intervene in all these struggles. I'm simply saying that there are options when it comes to diplomacy and foreign policy, and they can be very tightly calibrated. And the idea that if we don't do this right now, we're going to have this war, I think I think it's incendiary.
Look,
actually,
it's like this is like the Cuba thing. For how long do you want to play this game? We've been since 1979, we have met loggerheads with Iran. That didn't stop them from backing down to Iraq in that war. They're the one that said uncle, and they got out. Meanwhile, the Sunnis are running around what we know from the Iranian negotiations and Mousavi and others is, guess who's funneling money to the Sunni terrorists? Saudi Arabia, still. And it might go all the way up to the monarch. And we're worried about Iran, who's trying to defeat. Iran's arch enemy is not Israel, it's not America, although they're not real fond of us. It's Saudi Arabia, the Shia-Sunni conflict. There's no nuance in any of this debate. But the larger point is this. Why is it that we have to have this sort of Sean Hannity knee-jerk reaction? They hate us because we're free. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Then why didn't they attack us in the 19th century, in the 18th century? Well, the Barbary pirates and no. Serious attack. Because we weren't trying to control the region. When Israel kicked the Brits out after the British Mandate, we took over. And now we're there, we're the big sugar daddy, and guess who the target is? So we put more sanctions on Iran, and the mullahs in Iran go, see, what did I tell you about the United States? They do really hate us. And so we keep feeding the beast and then wondering why they hate us. Why is it unpatriotic to ask the question, why do they hate us?
So then you're actually in favor of what the president's doing.
Yes, I am. I'm in favor of the Iranian deal. Yeah, I am.
Which is so bizarre because people would not think of you as being that.
The only honest thing, Obama's destroyed the country from within. We're not going to lose the country from abroad. We're going to lose it from within, and we are. But the only honest thing the guy ever said was that when you end up demonizing me so much, you know, how many times can Mark Levin say, I hate Obama? Yeah, we get it, Mark. Thanks. When you do that, then when I come up with a good idea, you don't dare agree with me or support me because the constituents you've created to hate me will turn on you. And that is sad. Because no one's, you know, people say, well, Jason, I agree with you 90% of the time. And I would say, yeah, you know, if you agree with somebody 100% of the time, you got an issue, right? But nobody's wrong 100% of the time either. Nobody's right 100% of the time.
I've always said that. I've always said, well, I'm not always right or wrong, but, you know.
Yeah, well, Obama's not always right or wrong. He's just wrong 90% of the time. Doesn't mean the blind squirrel doesn't find an acorn.
But you agree with the Cuba thing, and you agree with on the foreign policy thing.
On the foreign policy primarily. And that's why I'm having real trouble with the Republican Party right now. That's for having a massive interventionist mode. Internationalism is big government, is liberalism.
One would argue that, you know, classic liberal is supposed to bring democracy and liberalism to other countries as well. That was the whole Woodrow Wilson thing.
Yeah.
Right? That
is exactly the Woodrow Wilson thing.
Yeah.
And make the world, is the quote was, I'm going to make the world safe for democracy. And why don't you just try here in America first? And now, what's ironic about Wilson is he ran on the man who kept us out of war.
Yeah.
And as soon as he got elected the second time, poof.
And I guess I'm trying to remember. It's kind of foggy, but the historical explanation is, well, it kind of caught him by surprise. World War One, in the same way that Bush bailed out the banks and GM because he got scared. Supposedly Wilson got freaked out about
the
about
illusion World of War victory. I. Read yeah. the book. It wasn't anything like that. It was his aide saying, "Well, you got to do this," and it was the British who were literally. Sending, you know, propaganda.
It was a British intelligence operation that convinced him that there was something from Mexico that came up from the Germans, and then the Lusitania occurred.
The beauty of the Lusitania is, guess what? We were supposed to be neutral at that time. We were shipping arms to the Allies.
Right.
And they lied. They said, oh, no, no, they just sank Americans. And the Germans said, no, 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 we've got a perimeter around here because you put a perimeter around us, and we're going to... And it was all a lie. The lies were astounding, and it becomes just one big exercise in war propaganda.
So what do people do about this? I mean, what if people want to get involved and do something? They don't necessarily agree with your assessment of foreign policy,
yep.
But they like your economic
stuff. Most people don't. No, no,
but
most
they
people,
like your economic
I'm a
stuff.
Pariah in the
so
Republican Party.
How do we work all that out? Like how does that get worked out at the basic political level?
You can't. My memo to Rand Paul is you better take over the party and change it because these neoconservative establishment types are never going to let you in.
How do you take it over, though, if people won't?
Well, Reagan was considered a renegade in 1976. It was the Ford establishment people that said, you're going to elect an actor, plus he wanted to eliminate Social Security. This man's a renegade. And he went over their heads to the point where he had the backing of the people, and everybody else then miraculously came along.
Well, they felt, I think it was the convention when he made the speech, and they thought,
yeah,
we
right.
nominated the wrong guy.
Right.
And I also think Reagan maybe wasn't ready in 76, and I think it took that to sort of leaven him and make him a stronger candidate for 1980. Plus, people got Carter, and they found out, you know, Ford lost, obviously.
I wonder what a more, shall we say, crisper Reagan would have done from 76 to 84 instead of 80 to 88. But look, here's why it's irreconcilable. Take a look at the budget sequester. It's up in September, October again. I think it's October 1, right around there. The budget sequester that came out of the July 2011 budget deal that said, okay, if you can't come up with a way to cut entitlements and cut the budget, we're going to have automatic 10% cuts across the board. Then Paul Ryan and Patty Murray got together to stave it off for 2 years, 2 years ago, right? Now it kicks back in this year. So now if they don't reach a budget, you know, the 12 or 13 appropriations bills that have to pass every October, if they don't reach that, sequester kicks in. Why isn't the Republican policy simple? We love, are you kidding? Real cuts off of welfare. We love this, a 10%, not a growth in spending, cuts in the discretionary domestic spending. Why? Oh, because it cuts the military. And so you've got Republicans running around undoing the sequester. You can't have big government abroad and have small government at home. It's right. never going to work. Well, and so I don't think it's reconcilable.
I think the sequester was brilliant, actually. And I did too. And because it was working in terms of cutting everything. And if military's got to be part of the cuts, then so be it. You know, as long as we have a. I think what was cool about it was it was across the board. And so right. everybody was taking the pain. And you're
shared
absolutely
sacrifice.
Right. They didn't like that, so they sent.
And they're going to undo it again this fall.
So how do you? But the question really, I don't. And to move the conversation along is, okay, so there's this political problem in the country, you know, and there's a whole bunch of these new ideas that are circulating, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's economics, I mean, to not necessarily to us, but to a lot of people out there. So there's these different new ideas that are circulating. Some people agree with them, some people don't. Some people might say, Jason, you're crazy with your crazy, you know,
pacifistic
yeah. nonsense. Others might go, later on, they might go, well, you know, it's consistent with the other stuff, but the main thing now is you go to these meetings, and you've spoken at a lot of the same people that I've spoken to. You go to these meetings, and you hear a lot of rhetoric, and you hear a lot of...
Bob, how many lit drops have you been on?
I've been on a lot of them, actually. No,
lit drop.
No, I haven't.
We're all guilty of this to a degree. I know where you're going with
this. Yeah, but the difference is that you and I have been working in this, and we've been working in the media and talking about this and trying to create a forum for this, and this is our work, whether it is... I'm not saying that I'm out here shilling for the Republican Party or that you're shilling for the Republican Party or libertarians or anything else, but our work is doing what we do, and it's hard work.
We get paid for doing this.
Well, I have no problem paying people for lit drops, but it's not the lit drops so much. Is it's going to the meetings, and I have been to a lot of BPOUs, and I've been an officer at my BPOU, and I learned a lot. I learned that just because I thought something was going to be a great idea didn't mean that everybody else thought it was going to be a great idea, and I learned that there were some pretty neat people that completely disagreed with me politically that I had to figure out, and we're talking about in the same party, that I had to figure out some common ground with to be able to work with at the BPOU level. What's happening is people are going to meetings of birds of a feather, where everyone agrees that we don't like this and we don't like that, but they're not political. They're not political institutions.
Well,
they're not working in their local party.
Can I interrupt you now, finally?
Yes.
Again, thank you.
Well, I was on a good roll there.
I know, that was pretty good.
And that's what's missing, because you can't. It isn't so much the lit drops, which I'm not even sure what lit drops
do. But I think what's in your head,
working in these groups.
I'm going off on these policy tangents, and you're coming back to why can't the Republicans do better? Whether it's Minnesota or the nation.
Or an independent party, for that matter. It doesn't have to be Republicans.
But I'm just saying, I think there are two reasons for that, to answer your question, cut to the quick, as they say. And that is, one, the Republicans, anyway, think that if they appeal to the talk radio crowd, to Fox News, and the Wall Street Journal editorial page, why they've won the country. And they haven't. They've created this little, you know, as you well know, as a radio guy, you get 5% share in this market. It used to be 10% in the old days, but you get 5% share now. You're a superstar.
Yeah.
You need 51% to win an election.
Right.
So they keep appealing to the small base, and then they can't figure out why in the general election they don't do better. Secondly, it is absolutely true, and has been my entire adult political life, that the left works harder than the right. Now, it makes sense to some degree because they get more from government. If you're getting your income from government, you're going to make certain the right guy gets elected.
Well, that's the argument. The thing that's frustrating about that is that the other side isn't making any headway because nobody will do anything. They won't participate.
They just want to be left alone.
Well, but they can't be left alone. That's the thing. If they want to fix it, they have to get involved. And it's so frustrating because
you
hear this stuff and you hear them complaining and they get mad and then they go home. And that's it.
Well, they call a talk radio show. They've done their job, they figure.
Except yeah. they haven't.
You get the government you deserve in the final analysis. One of the reasons that I stepped out early in the semi-retirement was, look, I'm not going to change this thing overnight, but I'll be damned if Mark Dayton gets any more of my money. So I'm rearranging my affairs through the limited interventions I do to make certain that my tax bill
is absolutely... I hope it's not the market.
Yeah, right. Well, no, that's lowering my tax bill.
Lower your tax bill, yeah.
But, you know, you're going on strike to a degree. And I do think the people are leaving Minnesota. If you take the GDP growth rate in Minnesota is now well below the national average. If you take a look at the median income in Minnesota, it still isn't what it was in 2007. So there is going to be, you know, and Medtronic, anybody say tax inversion? Of course these things are happening. So, but the flip side of that argument is, of course, that you got just a bunch of liberals here that like to work and give away half their income. and especially a bunch of rich ones
working for the state. But I mean, yeah,
a lot of a lot
or
of people
lawyers or people who have become wealthy, and I'm not quite sure if you would call it old money or what. I don't know what the statistics
are. Well, they assuage their guilt by giving away half of it, I guess.
I think Minnesota is interesting in the sense that I think there's a lot of people who, I think it's like you said, you've got a heritage here that's a little bit more susceptible to I'm my brother's keeper idea than you would have in Texas, you know, or Alaska.
Oh, sure.
But
I do think that politically you've got to turn the tables on the liberal left. I mean, you know, how moral is it to take the last dollar from a family that's trying to put their kid through college in order to put your kid through college? How moral is it for Al Franken and Amy to send another son and daughter to a war that is unnecessary? You really got to turn the tables, and Ventura was able to do that. Who knows? Maybe the only way to get elected in Minnesota is to run as an independent, if you believe in small government.
Can you build an organization that can actually get you?
Well, you don't get a convention with all the balloons,
right? No, but can you build a street army that can get you elected?
It depends, I guess. Jesse did it.
Well, that's true. I can't argue with that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's you know,
was it the force of personality? I guess, but
well, sure. You got to have a candidate. I mean, Ventura, as I say, when he was running, was not sounding like an independent of the left. He was not sounding like an independent socialist. Now, he ended up governing that way in many ways, although he was the last governor to actually cut the top income tax rate, ironically enough. But Dayton is a socialist on steroids. That's what's so amazing. But he raises taxes. Now, what did he say yesterday? We've got to bail out businesses in Mille Lacs because walleye fishing is down. And he castigated both sides of the aisle that opposed it, saying, I just can't believe how some people won't help their fellow Minnesotans in need. So he's for corporate welfare. He's for massively increasing taxes to the fourth highest rate in the country. And every time he does these things, his poll numbers go up. So
scary.
What does that say?
Scary is what it is. That's amazing.
Then
I mean, I don't know what to say to that. I don't have anything. I have no return.
I know what to say. He's not getting any more of my money. Or much of it, anyway.
Where are you going to go, Wisconsin?
Well, no, I just, you know, the ultimate tax shelter is to rearrange your finances so you're not earning a lot of income. And if you can do that, and you're fortunate enough to do that, then do it. Starve the beast. But, or sell an audiobook.
Let's talk about media real quick, because we love to talk about media.
Yeah.
We do. So we've castigated talk radio in past podcasts, and we've said we've torn them to limb.
Well, what's wrong with talk radio? I mean, do you think it's influential as it was 10, 15, 20 years ago?
I think the big problem with talk radio is more and more people are finding other things to listen to through digital means, and I think that it's similar to what happened with broadcast television and Netflix, and, well, first cable television, then Netflix, and then the advent of on-demand video and audio, and I think that's the thing that's hurting them the most. Is that people, especially younger demographics, and especially when it comes to talk radio, they just don't need to listen to the radio. In fact, if you know anybody in their, if you know any 18 to 34s, if you spend any time with 18 to 34s, they don't even talk about the radio. They don't listen to the radio. It's Spotify, it's Pandora, it's, you know, SoundCloud, it's other stuff. They don't even turn the radio on.
Some radio companies are doubling down, buying more radio stations.
I don't know why. I can't figure out why.
Yeah, what's interesting about the whole broadcast spectrum is it's very much analogous to newspapers. Once it goes digital, the old model doesn't work as well. Once everything goes digital, you can't charge $10,000 for a full-page ad online like you used to in the Star Tribune or the Pioneer Press. And you can't do the same thing in broadcast, whether it's television or radio. It's going digital, and people aren't going to pay that. It's just too much. It's too diffuse out there. So they can't figure out a way to monetize the new era. And that's why, and of course, the debt they've accumulated. But you've got all of these television stations with all these digital channels, and you're seeing all these new networks coming up. The old TV shows, Antenna TV, and all that stuff. Well, they got something to fill.
They've got tons of inventory to fill, and they
don't know what to do.
The machine needs fuel, so they just put crap in there and think people.
You would think it'd be the heyday of more local programming.
Oh, come on.
Yeah,
it would be. Maybe it'll happen, but
well, the market is such you can lowball talent now.
We could get Mexican immigrants to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And do it in Spanish.
Well,
wait a minute, they're already doing that. Never mind.
Univision has become like a huge network. That's the thing that's interesting. Is it, you know, it used to be
one of the Univision top radio stations in like Miami and LA, and
looked like 1950s television. And now Univision is like where everyone goes to announce their candidacy. You know.
Well, and that's what some people are concerned about. That we're losing our culture, and language is probably the preeminent poster child of culture.
What's it going to be like when we're 80? What's the world going to be like when we're 80?
Oh, Lord.
Next year. Yeah, what's it going to be like when we're 80 years old?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to get too apocalyptic here. Everybody says that. I remember, you know, in the 40s, the world's going to hell. In the 50s, Elvis Presley. Well, there you go. There goes the morals of the kids. Which, ironically, the morals of the kids did decline. But they've come back. No, I don't, you know, we're going to survive the way Europe survives. But are we going to have stellar economic growth? Is your child or your grandchildren going to have the same ability to buy a home and a car and do the things that, I don't know. It could be that, but by God, we'll be equally miserable. And that's the mother load of liberalism. So,
does it feel, and this is, should probably be the end, but I mean, does it feel like the movement toward the things that you and you've talked about in this podcast, you know, a little bit more libertarian view, does it feel like the movement toward that is fading?
No, I think that's where young people are, and nobody's talking to them. I really do. That's one of the reasons I like Rand Paul. He goes in there and says, well, excuse me, we don't want to fight the bad guys, whether it's ISIS or Al-Qaeda or the Ruskies or anybody else, just so we can impose a national security state in America. What's the point of winning the war if the NSA is spying on my emails? So he goes into Berkeley, Cal Berkeley, and says, no, you got to have a warrant. Sorry, guys. Collection of bulk metadata is not, you know, and Alan Dershowitz, of all people, who's such a con man anyway, this comes out and says, well, this is no different than the mail watch program, or maybe the dog's going into the house and he's sniffing around, and when he finds something, we'll hold that, but we won't open it until we get a warrant. No, you gotta have a warrant before the dog gets into the house. And so we're losing our freedoms, and this is the Republican Achilles heel, in this zeal for, oh my God, it's the war on terror, terrorism is everywhere. And of course, Democrats want to destroy our freedoms just because they want to redistribute income. And so it's a bad place, and nobody's speaking to people that want to say, you know what, we don't need the national security state, and we don't need the welfare state. What we need is liberty. And who's talking about that?
You are.
Well, and I talk about it on my podcast every now and then. But I don't do as many as
you do. Where
do
you find your podcast?
It's on iTunes and SoundCloud.
Okay, good.
So SoundCloud's the host, but the iTunes directory is there, and you can get it at either place. I put it on the website. But I don't do as many as you. I'm just dabbling with it once a week, get something off my... Which is nice, because I got to get really excited about an issue before I want to spend the time to set it up.
Yeah.
Where it becomes work if you got, I got to get two podcasts out today. I didn't want to do that.
Well, I didn't intend to do two podcasts today, but we did.
Oh, I'm sure. Easily. So, how long have we been here? An hour and a half?
About an hour.
Yeah. That's good. It's good to see you.
All right, man.
All right, Bobby.
Thank you.
Be good. Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to Podcast 404, of course, sponsored by X Government Cars. Soon to be introducing X Government Trucks. It's the same approach to these great off-fleet government vehicles. One owner maintained, then they get them all ready for you, whether it's a work truck, whether it is an SUV, whether it is a Ford Crown Vic or a Hemi Charger or any X Government car, they can take care of you. And soon, X Government Trucks, I'll tell you all about it. But remember, right now, the main thing about X Government Cars to remember is the financing, which gets everybody approved no matter what your level of credit. You can apply online safely and securely at xgovernmentcars.com. And thanks, Ed, for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcasts. And yeah, we'll do the bullhorn one more time. Here we go.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And thanks to the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast.com, Alpha Systems. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is, first of all, FAA approved now. Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banner for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. And thank you for listening on Stitcher.com and iTunes, or TuneIn or blog. blogtalkradio.com or right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Really appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com, which fund this vehicle and the many things that I've been doing with it. Thank you very much, and thanks for listening to podcast 404, and thank you, Jason, as well.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing?